From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move on into the summer, or through the summer, another hot summer, as all of them are here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Appreciate you all being with us, and we're pleased and honored to be joined by Blake Young, the president and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Blake, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. So much happening in our world. I think we all hoped that by late July we'd have this virus tamped down a little bit, or maybe a bit of a respite, which the epidemiologists were telling us they kind of expected it to go away in the summer, and it didn't happen. Suddenly, we've had a resurgence in certain states, including California, and I'm sure that has affected your workload and your strategies, if you will, dramatically.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. What it's done is it just further makes us really focus on pivoting post-COVID, understanding that the longer this goes on, the more in need and the more it drives up the demand. Right now, we're just really mindful and planful of the resources that we have, not really understanding if there's an end date, but knowing that there'll be a lot of people that need our resources for quite some time. So we're just trying to wrap our head around that. At the same time, trying to keep our staff and volunteers as safe as possible while we deal with this demand, because it's quite daunting on a daily basis.
And, you know, I think it's one of the, I guess you can call it the silent killer. You know, some people are going about their daily lives and they haven't been sick, or maybe they were positive and they were relatively asymptomatic or minor sickness. Other people get very sick. Many people have died. It's easy, I think, sometimes to let down your guard and think, well, I know these people I'm working with, or I know these people I'm socializing with. And as they've told us many times, you have to assume everybody has it, and everybody has to protect each other. I can imagine how that must affect your volunteer pool and the protocols you have to have in place for them.
You know, I'll tell you, first of all, we are just so thankful that so many volunteers are taking the risk, understanding that we're doing the best we can as an organization to keep people sanitized, socially distant, keep things clean, et cetera. But we've just had an enormous output of support from volunteers that are really interested in stepping up and helping us during this time, even with the risks associated to coming out and volunteering, which, you know, I believe we've mitigated well, but, you know, like you said, it's a silent situation, so we can't take care of everything. But, you know, we're really focused on making sure that our distributions and our partner agencies are safe. We're working with them very closely, providing a lot of PPE and guidance if they are requesting it. And then our own distributions, we're really trying to continue to be touchless. We have one at Encina High and Christian Brothers. Those are continuing to go well. They're well attended. It seems like the public is really appreciating those food resources. And so we're just really, you know, trying to do the best we can, understanding that this is going to be around for a while.
Blake, as we speak, Congress is debating another, perhaps some sort of a stimulus program, whether the federal unemployment, which has been very helpful to many, many people, expires this month, right near the end of the month, 25th of July. We don't know if there will be additional unemployment assistance. State unemployment will go on, of course. We don't know about whether it'll be a stimulus check like many people received, not everyone, but many people received several months ago. We don't know about all those things, and we don't know about employment. If employment is coming back, it has for a while. It's just not, the rate isn't as high as it was. California's is still quite high. How do those things affect your planning?
That's a great question. All things considered, I mean, so unemployment we know is going to be steadily high for a while, and
right.
we know who that affects most, the most vulnerable of our neighbors and folks that we're already trying to help and reach, the fixed income seniors, the folks that, you know, have marginal employment. We serve a great deal of people that work in the restaurant and hotel industry, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they were already, you know, on the margins. I mean, we know that the majority of people in the United States, and even California is worse because of the cost of living, don't have more than $400 in their savings account. So you can imagine somebody blows an engine or, you know, the kids get stitches, that they don't have health care, et cetera. That blows their, you know, their savings. And, you know, people are already struggling with the high cost of food and housing. So, you know, for us, we're bracing for the demand being very high for quite some time. But as you question, you know, how do you plan for that? So, you know, we're setting aside a portion of our budget, which we really don't have in this type of demand situation. But we're dedicated in the long haul to make sure that the folks that need food resources the most are going to get them. And we're reaching out to our partners, our supporters who have been just wonderful, and asking them to step up a little bit more, hoping that we can meet the demand. But at some point, there's a tipping point, and we don't know where that is now. You know, we are getting help from the federal government in food resources, mm-hmm. from the state, in some food resources, et cetera. We also know that our grocery volume and other volume of food has gone down or compromised with the food chain. So we're just trying to juggle a lot, but, you know, we want to make sure people that are listening that know somebody that is in need or that is in need themselves, that we're going to continue to provide food resources, which, you know, we all know is such a basic need, but so important and more important during this time.
So that was you anticipated my next question about the food chain, the food supply, whether it's demand or just some interruption in the supply. Has that been relatively steady, or are you seeing some bumps in the road?
Well, we've seen some bumps. I think we talked about on the last time we mm-hmm. spoke. Initially, the reaction from the public with COVID was everybody ran to the grocery store and bought quadruple what they felt
right.
or what they normally would need. And that made a huge kink in the supply chain where, you know, if I ordered 5 semi-trucks full of food, it would be on our doorstep 7 days later. Now it's taken 5 to 6 to 7 weeks.
Wow.
And that continues to be the case because us as food banks are competing with all the grocery stores. We're competing with all other food banks that are regional, large food banks buying high volumes of food. So we are very aware of the supply, and the demand is making it challenging for us to be able to meet the need and to get all of the food resources to the agencies so folks can have food. So it's challenging. We're working around it. There's lots of different strategies that we're deploying to ensure that folks in Sacramento County can get good nourishment, but it's been very challenging.
Have you had to adjust what you're able to give a person who shows up in need?
Yeah. So, that's a great question. So, it varies, but it varies in the individual type of food, but we continue to focus on fresh farm produce, substantial amount of produce. Eggs have been very consistent. Meat's been up and down, but on a protein basis, eggs have been very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then our staples, we planned right when COVID hit. We bought almost triple the food we normally would, knowing that this was going to happen. And other food banks had that foresight as well. So, you know, the good pastas, the good legumes, the good canned vegetables. I mean, canned food, where we were trying to get away from it and go more fresh,
sure,
has actually been a blessing, because the shelf life's longer, and we can store it and move it a little bit easier. And the agencies who lack the cold storage can easily handle that and more safely handle that. So yes, we've had to make adjustments, but we still continue to focus on what is good quality food, and looking at, you know, the clientele, seniors, for example, we continue to try to focus on low sodium, et cetera. So, I mean, we're still mindful of the types of food and making sure people are getting good quality food during this unfortunate situation.
You know, you go anywhere in the Sacramento Valley, you're going to see right now in late July, you're going to see, you know, almonds. It looks like a bumper crop of almonds. You can hardly see leaves on the trees for all the nuts on those trees. You're going to see walnuts. You're going to see tomatoes. You're going to see melons. You're going to see just this corn. You're going to see just this bounty that we raise. There's almost not a crop you can't raise in California, maybe pineapples. But it's mind-boggling how much we produce for the country, for the world. Does that have any effect on your food supply, the fact that you're in the middle of all this bounty?
It does. For instance, so we do a cooperative purchase of produce with 40 other food banks in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us a tremendous buying power. In fact, we buy whole farms sometimes. We're moving 100 to 200 million pounds of food through that system.
Wow.
So California, you know, has, I think, roughly 250 specialty crops. So we do have at our disposal a lot of wonderful, beautiful food right at our doorstep that we can purchase and take advantage of. You know, strawberries, you had mentioned almonds. I mean, gosh, beautiful squash and melons and,
yep,
and corn. So, I mean, we are buying a tremendous amount of produce. It does help that we're in the state of California. Your smorgasbord, if you will, of produce would look a lot different. We're very fortunate in this area to be able to have such wonderful produce.
My neighbor from another part of the country, he wants to know if you've got okra.
Well, that's kind of funny. This old boy's from Bakersfield, so
we actually
grew okra growing up. And,
sure.
And, most people don't know how to prepare okra, because if you don't know how, it's like eating leather. But it's a high nutritious. Not everybody would buy it, but you'd be or grow it. But you'd be surprised at how grateful, appreciative, and how resourceful are the people that come to us for services. I mean, they want the okra, they want the squash. These are folks that prepare food and are just so grateful to have it. But, you know, there's a whole other side of this, Bob, which is ironic, that we grow the world's food, but Sacramento County is higher in food insecurity rates than the state and national average.
Mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling.
Wow. Yeah, I remember growing up when we'd open the can of vegetable soup and we'd look at my mom and we could identify most of the vegetables in there. And I said, "What's that?" She said, "That's okra." She grew up on a farm. So lima beans. Yeah. Yeah. It's just it's funny. You grow up, like you say, you grew up in Bakersfield, completely different culture. Even at the far end of the San Joaquin Valley, completely different culture than, say, in Red Bluff at the other end of the valley, you know.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, too, I mean, I stood in the food line with my grandmother
mm-hmm.
Quite a few times as a small kid. And, you know, I mean, those were days where, you know, you did cook soup, you did cook beans, you prepared all day long to feed your kids. And, you know, I have some perspective, certainly, on, you know, the struggles people have to put good food on the table three meals a day. And this COVID crisis breaks my heart because there are so many people that had never reached out to a food bank or a food program before, you know, and now they're, you know, there's a lot of humility there coming and trying to figure that out, but also, you know, not ever doing it before. There's some embarrassment, and, you know, we try really, really hard, even in our distributions, to be happy, to provide smiles for folks and make sure they know it's okay, because the amount of people, I mean, single moms, seniors, I mean, it is just tremendous, and it just breaks your heart.
Yeah, I learned, like you talking about being in line with your grandma. I remember, like you say, my mom grew up on a farm in North Dakota during the Depression, and 17 kids in the family, and I remember just watching her growing up, used every part of the fruit, every part of the vegetable. She would eat an apple and eat the core, you know, just because that's the way she grew up. Every part of the animal, you know, you'd boil the bones after you ate the meat. You know, it was just, you just realized that there was a difference. And you're right, when people who have never needed assistance, I just think that's got to be one of the challenges that you face, is treating people with dignity. Obviously, you're going to do that, but how do you, you know, imbue on them that, hey, this is okay, this is happening to everybody, and you're seeing it through all strata of our society. Who knew who was going to get closed down and laid off? Who knew that if you, I don't know, you ran a gym, you were going to get shut down? You know, I mean, it's not random at all, but you couldn't have predicted these things.
Yeah, and you know, don't forget, you have you just have a ton of stress right now. There's so many people, even that have jobs, but their kids aren't going to school,
right?
And they're trying to juggle so many things, yet perform at their work, and they're now their workspace is completely changed. You have people that were, you know, working mom and dad in the service industry. They're completely laid off and or working marginal hours. And so you just have a lot of people that there's so much uncertainty and so much stress right now that, you know, if we can, we're doing our jobs if, A, we can provide good quality food resources for folks. But also, you know, that smile, that kindness, that way to, you know, receive people that do have uncertainties. It really makes a difference, and you know, it's very heartwarming, and it's really at the core of our work at Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. I'm just, you know, honored to be, you know, working alongside of our volunteers and staff. They just do such a tremendous job.
Blake, the schools, which at least in most counties, or many counties in California, and certainly in the most populous counties in California, are, for the time being, it appears, going to be back to virtual learning, which means kids aren't going to get up on campus. Most schools, so many schools, provide a lot of nutrition for kids. Where does that sit? I know a lot of them will still have distributions. I know that you aren't directly involved in that, but I know you're involved in everything. How is that working out? Or, you know, what are the plans there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we are involved in a small way, and I'll tell you, I've been really impressed with the school district. So the school districts did reach out to us. And you're right. Normally we don't work directly, so we can assume that folks in need that have children in free and reduced, and believe it or not, you would be blown away at how 3 out of 4 children in Sacramento County qualify for free and reduced.
Yeah,
lunch.
That's a stunning figure, isn't it?
It's heartbreaking. And what we've done during this pandemic is work with the school districts to try to get groceries and food to the families of children who are coming to school, even though school's not in session, mm-hmm. summertime, mm-hmm. to get that free and reduced meal, mostly free. So, but again, we're mindful of demand and food volume. I mean, we have been helping them. It's not normally in our wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're glad to do so, and they've been great to work with, but it is a concern, and we're just monitoring it and working with the school districts just to see how we could plug in and help, because we know that it's only going to get worse with children at home. So the two areas we're really trying to focus right now is children and isolated seniors. Obviously, everybody's important, but the children and isolated seniors, just simply because there are really disruptions in nutrition for them that we want to be mindful of.
So, which brings me to the notion you talk about seniors maybe who can't get out, children who if mom and dad are lucky enough to still have a job, but it takes them away from home, and the school says, yeah, we're still open, you come pick up your lunch, but they don't have any way to get there, or they're too young. Do we? How about that? And seniors that have. Either don't have transportation or don't have the physical ability or not even seniors, other people with various disabilities. Are people falling through the cracks?
Oh, you bet. No doubt about it. Now, however, we formed through the pandemic, a silver lining in the pandemic, that we formed a partnership with a wonderful organization, as you know, Paratransit.
Right.
And Paratransit has been delivering food to about 3,000 seniors that we serve.
Oh, that's great.
On a monthly basis. And they have just been absolutely wonderful. In this situation, Sacramento Food Bank is really, we're trying to figure out, post-COVID, God willing, how to expand our reach in the senior population, and how can we plug in other places to ensure that children have good nutrition. But the senior piece is something near and dear to my heart, in our heart as an organization, and this has given us a really good opportunity to kind of look at our programming in a different way, understanding that the demand is going to be really high for quite some time. And it's such a vulnerable population. We want to make sure they stay safe and healthy. We're really looking at ways to grow those programs. So we're actually really excited about starting to work on plans to do that.
Bleak, I know I've asked this question before, but you obviously rely occasionally on fundraisers, especially the Run to Feed the Hungry. Has that already been scratched off the calendar, or is that something you still hope to have at Thanksgiving time, or not?
Yeah, that's I didn't catch. I think you said Run to Feed the Hungry,
right,
did you?
Right.
Okay. Bob, I assumed. wow, that's something that has me shaking in my boots, quite frankly. We have not made the announcement yet, only because we're still working behind the scenes to see what happens. But let me tell you, no Run to Feed the Hungry for Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services is a scary situation. That's a huge revenue boost for the organization. And obviously it's a blessing for the community. They really enjoy it. So we are looking at that as we speak. And in the next couple of weeks, we are going to make a decision on what we're going to do, and we will announce it to the public. But I can tell you that would hurt us financially very much.
Yeah, and people go, oh, gee, it's July, it's August, September, October. That's 4 months away. I mean,
yeah.
You don't have to make a decision now, but you do, because these things take so much planning.
Exactly. Well, I mean, we know that if we feel that I stand corrected, we feel that the community will understand. First of all, I believe that the community looks at our organization as a really valuable resource to ensure that our community as a whole is productive and healthy and a good community. So I feel strongly that if we were physically unable to do that, we could have some sort of virtual situation where I feel people would strongly support it, knowing almost as a bridge to get us through this year to be able to come back and even stronger the following year. So we have some ideas, but right now we're just kind of trying to figure out working with our county public health, et cetera, to see what happens.
Yeah, maybe if you come up with a really, really, really cool T-shirt, the one that you just got to have.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, well, we will.
I'm sure you will. Yeah, and maybe some special shoelaces or something. I know Bishop Soto loves that event, loves being the official starter.
Yeah, we love having him. So I mean, we absolutely love having him. It's such a wonderful way to kick off the event. So we'll figure it out. I mean, we will have an announcement here in the next couple of weeks on what we're going to do. And I'm not trying to be vague. I just don't have I don't have the answers right now, because we're really trying to follow what's best for the community. And like you said, it takes so much planning that we're going to have to make a decision here in the next couple of weeks.
Blake, as you said earlier, the focus, the demand right now, everything's about the very basics, food. Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, that's not just a little add-on and Family Services. That's a major part of your function. How much of that part are you able to still perform with so much emphasis now on resources and staffing and volunteers on food?
Yeah, great question. Well, we've pretty much deployed most of our staff that is in our Family Services division up in the food program, but we've maintained a couple of programs to fulfill our obligation, number one, because a couple of the programs, our immigration, our refugee programs, can be done remotely, and secondly, we are continuing to provide on an emergency basis some family services stuff like parent supplies, baby supplies, and some clothing, et cetera, but only on an emergency basis and where the public doesn't come into our building. So those are scheduled by appointment. They're on an emergency basis, and it's very little, but it's something that we can do safely and when people are in dire need. An example would be somebody's house burns down, and we get, God forbid, but it's happened many times over my career, and we're able to deploy some staff on an emergency basis to help folks, et cetera. But there's very little activity here, and we want to make sure that, you know, our food bank is well-staffed to meet the demand, and we just made a decision as an organization that food resources is the highest priority right now to keep people healthy.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Are there? I know you do a lot of the great refugee resettlement. Has the number of people in those types of programs, has it dwindled because of this? Or
Oh yeah. We have a few families that we're assisting, but for the most part, it has been put on hold. And you know, for obvious reasons, and but we've had a few, and you know, we're blessed to be able to help them, and in a good position to do that. But as you've stated, our Family Services division down here in Oak Park has really risen to the occasion on an emergency basis. But our staff has just done a wonderful job pivoting and going up to our food bank to help work, and we're lucky to have such dedicated staff.
Can you use more volunteers, and if so, what sort of person, what kind of parameters do you have, what kind of restrictions do you have?
Yeah, there's not much restrictions right now. I mean, we're limiting the number only because of social distancing,
right.
And folks can go on our website and sign up. It's very simple. There is no orientation required right now because of COVID. So, yes, we are entertaining and hosting volunteers right now. They're mostly tied to our food program, but you know, we encourage folks, You know, it's an acceptable activity. The organization ensures your safety and sanitization, and definitely, if folks are interested, we'd love to have them. Obviously, for senior populations, we've suggested. Some have said, no way, we want to volunteer, but we've suggested folks that are 65 and older to really consider possibly holding off if you have compromised health in any way.
Yeah, you must be hearing from people that say, hey, 70 is the new 40. Didn't you know that?
you have no idea. We have, and that, you know, that's an interesting point is I feel that one of the things the organization does really well is we provide meaningful volunteer work.
Right.
And I can tell you that over the, one of the things that stands out in my career is that I have witnessed firsthand so many healthy-minded seniors above the age of 70, 75
right.
that continue to come to the organization to help, and because it feeds their soul, it feeds their mind, it feeds their body. I've had so many conversations of folks that I've tried to honor in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep doing this? And, it, you know, it's the same answer over and over because it feeds my soul, it feeds my mind, it feeds my body. It makes me feel younger. It keeps me active. And so that's kind of another byproduct of other than, you know, helping people in need, we're really providing a tremendous service to folks that want meaningful volunteer opportunities and that feel good about it.
Yeah, I mean, as you well know, the seniors tend to be the lifeblood of so many organizations that rely on volunteers.
No question about it. We're just blessed to have so many. You know, Father Madigan started mm-hmm. the program so many years ago, and that's the population that he focused on to do most of the work. And, you know, it's funny, 45 years later, it's still pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. What a bit. I mean, I just so admire Father Madigan. He started where, in one parish?
Yeah, Immaculate Conception in Oak Park.
Right.
And that,
right,
you
near
know,
your
that,
headquarters.
Right near our headquarters. That was born the soup kitchen, if you will. And, you know, him and a cadre of folks, God bless them, you know, really started looking at how other ways that we could help. And, you know, it really, the organization was founded, started, and continues to be the backbone by volunteers. And it's really a wonderful story, quite frankly.
Yeah, he's just a remarkable guy, and you know, it always so upbeat and optimistic, and you know, we're gonna win this thing, you know. You get such a sense of confidence from him.
You do, and you know, Father Madigan just simply has just such a wonderful way to describe why we do the work and how important it is. It's you know, I still talk to Father Madigan quite often. He's been such a blessing to the community and certainly been provided great guidance for me.
Yeah, I remember one time going to a Lenten fish fry down at the, you know, St. Joseph's down in Clarksburg, and it just happened to be his birthday. And I thought, God has blessed me. I was just like, wow. And this is a number of years ago, but what a remarkable man, and what a remarkable legacy. And there you guys are in his footsteps. Sometimes he's still stepping, right?
Oh, he definitely is stepping. And, you know, he was at the Run to Feed the Hungry, and you know, he you know, it's just an honor to be able to, you know, continue his legacy. And, yes, he's definitely around, and he's proud of the work that we're doing, and he continues to offer guidance, et cetera. So I think there's still a lot of people in this community that call on him for his guidance. And you know, he seems right now as strong as ever. So Godspeed, Father Madigan.
Absolutely. You know, and it's one of the things, you know, I know with my kids saying, you know, it's a big world and there's so many problems and what can one person do? so many. I mean, almost all great organizations were either one or two people or a handful of people got together. They all started small, you know. And you don't even have to be big to have an impact on the world. This is a great example. Blake, what can our listeners do that could help Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, you know, in your mission?
Well, I mean, right now we'd love folks to volunteer with us. We'd love folks to provide a financial gift. It's we can turn $1 into 5 meals. That's an incredible multiplier. So, and we really encourage folks to become part of the family, become a monthly sustainer. That's something that we've really encouraged over the years, people to give, you know, whatever is meaningful to them on a monthly basis. That allows the organization to really rely on that base of funding. You can go on our website. You can cut a check, sacramentofoodbank.org. You know, or you can refer folks that may be in need, knowing that you have confidence that they'll come to us and we will make sure we take care of them.
Very good. Yeah, and as opposed to a bag of zucchini, a check is much more valuable to you people in terms of because of your buying power.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, we, you know, like I'd mentioned earlier, we're in an association of food banks in California that allows us, because of the volume, to buy very, very low. Obviously, we get donated food as well, good quality food, grocery stores, et cetera. So, you know, we do have high buying power. Like I said, $1 we can put into 5 meals. So, yeah, that is, we would be honored to be able to receive financial gifts from folks.
Very good. Blake, always a pleasure. I know you... You're working around the clock there. I hope you've got a cot with a pillow where you can lie down every now and then.
Well, it's really an honor to do this work, and, you know, whatever it takes. I mean, and I'm not alone. I mean, our staff and volunteers feel the same way, and, you know, we're just collectively trying to hold on and do the best we can for folks, because, you know, there's just so many people in such a compromising situation right now. We want to help as much as we can.
Well, God bless you. God bless your staff. God bless all your volunteers and all the people you serve. And our prayers and best wishes go with you. Thanks for spending the time with us today, and thanks for all you do.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you, everybody out there, for supporting the organization. We're grateful to all of you.
Very good. Blake, we'll talk to you again soon, and we'll hope for the best on the run to feed the hungry.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. Take care.
Thanks, Blake. That's Blake Young, the president and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Yeah, as he explained, the very best thing you can do, volunteer. They always need volunteers. And also, you know, financial contributions, because they do have such buying power. When you hear a dollar, they can make that stretch into 5 meals. He's not just saying that. That's actually the way it works. They have tremendous buying power, and they can buy, you know, very discounted and great food that they can put together. And so if you went to the grocery store to buy food and say, I'm going to donate that, it's much better if you just donate the cash, because they can get a lot more food for it. And just get a hold of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. What a great people doing the Lord's work in the Lord's vineyard in a time of great need. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission, and also to support the diocese, and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Lori Power, Associate Superintendent with the Catholic School Department. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Lori, and thanks for all the great work you and the wonderful staff at our great Catholic schools are doing as we anticipate the next academic year just around the corner. Well, we are pleased to welcome in Susan Berkey. Susan, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Bob.
Susan, tell us about your role with schools and what you're up to now here in July.
Oh, I know. Wow, we're on a crazy roller coaster, and we're just kind of riding the wave. And I'm the principal here at St. Isidore Catholic School, and we currently have third grades, transitional kindergarten through eighth grade. And we're just, we're hoping and praying that we can open up this school year with face-to-face in-house classes. So we're, I'm spending a lot of time on my knees in prayer asking the Lord to please help this to happen.
You're wearing out those kneecaps.
Absolutely. Well, that and the lower back.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Prayer on your knees gets harder.
Oh, yes.
I know. So you're what? Sutter County, is that right?
Correct.
I know it's just like, wait a minute. Yuba County does not have Yuba City. But
yes, that's kind of the way it all. Yes, that's the way
must,
it all is.
Must be hard to teach your kids geography. They go, wait a minute, aren't we in Yuba County?
Exactly. Whereas I'm thinking, well, wow, why can't we just open up in Yuba County?
That's right.
And then transition to Sutter County.
Exactly.
Because Yuba County's not on the watch list.
Well, so the governor's watch list, which changes almost by the day. Unfortunately, but Sutter County has been put on it, and there are various criteria. But you can also drop from the list. And initially, you were planning to go back to in person, correct?
Correct.
But being on the governor's watch list puts you in you can't do it now, but it can change. You can drop off of the watch list too. So it really Wow, I can't.
Right. I kind of feel like we're now in the penalty box in a hockey game right now.
That's very apt. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, when do we get out? And then I'm ready to play again.
Oh,
and we know we get ready to create version 3 of our return to school plan.
Yeah. You went to virtual or whatever, you know, distance
learning.
There's a bunch of March the 16th, if I'm recalling right, I think Friday the 13th. I'll always remember Friday the 13th of March.
Oh yes, it was real this year.
Everything went down, and by Monday our Catholic schools were up and running on a virtual basis. What were the biggest challenges then in that transition?
I think the biggest challenges were for just a few of our teachers to feel comfortable going online, and it really gave them the opportunity to hone and their computer skills. So I think that was probably a little bit challenging. Fortunately, we were able to still gather as a staff that first week because there weren't, we were able to strategize and work together to be able to build a team and encourage each other. So we did that, and then we had to start weeding out an abundance that we almost were hit with too much information.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be able to filter out what was the most essential, and then work from there. And, you know, we decided as a staff that it would be best if each teacher took on the role of remaining in contact with each student's family to provide encouragement and support and direction. And, then as time went on and everyone started Zooming and things, as a staff, we ended up gathering every morning together in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, ended up being the part that helped support the teachers so that they could support the families.
Did most of the staff come to the school site, or were the staff working from home as well?
They were, once that first week was over and there was the full, shelter-in-place stay-at-home, then they were all staying. They were all at home, right? So, they did send all of the students home on that Friday the 13th with their supplies and their textbooks and materials. And we did have a little bit of, that first week we did have families coming in getting, laptops, electronic devices, and some other materials. So that first week was kind of helping get everybody that didn't have everything they needed on Friday, the supplies they needed to continue going forward.
So you're in Yuba City, and of course, it's a good sized urban area with Marysville right there. But I'm sure you have a number of students. The surrounding area is all farmland, and a few
mm-hmm.
small towns like Sutter and some of those other towns. But basically, you've got a wide demographic, if you will, in terms of who is in your student body. And I can imagine that this quick switch had many different tentacles, if you will, depending on who the student was and what their individual situation was.
Right, because we did have some families where their mom and dad had to work, so we had some children that had to go and stay with grandparents in like Santa Maria or somewhere out of town.
Right.
So we had a lot of grandparents that were helping with the online learning. So not only did we get to work with parents, we got to meet and work with a lot of grandparents.
Yep.
So it was really fascinating, and I thought it was beautiful to see the way all of these families took care of each other and the way the family dynamics worked. And it was just amazing how supportive the extended families were during this time period.
Yeah, you're in an area where you're one of the few Catholic schools. I'm thinking the closest one would probably be in Colusa.
Colusa and Oroville,
yeah. So mm-hmm. As opposed to an urban area, I mean a larger urban area like Sacramento, where you've got a number of Catholic schools within a few miles of each other,
sure.
you're kind of taking in a much larger area, probably, I would think, in terms of where your students come from.
Absolutely, and we do have students that come from Yuba County and even some that are up in Butte County. I know we had a family that is from Biggs that's passed, well, right before Gridley.
Right, yeah, Gridley, yeah.
Yes, yes.
All these wonderful little towns, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and if you live in Sutter, you're halfway between Our Lady of Lourdes and St. Isidore, so.
That's right. I don't know if you lived in the town of Sutter how you could do anything but sit in your backyard and look at those buttes all day long. They're so stunning.
Right, right. No, and that's highly sought after property. Have that view at the base of the buttes. And usually people that do have that property tend to be pretty self-sufficient. You know, they've got livestock and gardens, and, you know, They're free roamers out there.
I have four teenagers, and we were getting, you know, a little bit stir crazy a couple of months ago, and I said, let's go for a ride. And we went up and we went through Sutter, and I said, I know there's a road that goes right through those buttes, and we found it, and oh my goodness. You know, it was like kind of late spring and just green and beautiful, and And then you come out, I think we came out at Meridian there on Highway 20, and they said, let's do that again. Let's turn around and go back through the other way. It was just so beautiful.
And that's I've had to tell my own children, I currently have a daughter that came home from college and mm-hmm. then a son that's a junior at, it's going to be a senior at Jesuit High School.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they take it for granted what we have here. I know we had cousins from San Diego come up, and they were just so jealous of, you have all this land out here, there's farmland out here. You've got relatives that only you can be out here doing something besides just being stuck in your little box in a planned community.
Yeah. Oh, it's God's country. I know. It's just really, really beautiful. I tell my kids that we got four teenagers, one home from college, like you, I tell them every day, you don't know how lucky you are that we can go. We live in Davis, and I said one mile out of town, and you're in nothing but farmland. There's sunflowers and safflower and tomatoes and almonds and walnuts and everything. It's just mind-boggling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that, in a lot of ways, was. You know, our students and our families have been blessed because they do have, you know, a lot of them are on property or have access to, you know, ranches and farms. And
mm-hmm.
so the kids at least can be outside and playing and, they're not just stuck in playing computer games or video games and watching TV. So that's been a blessing.
Well, Susan, we certainly pray for all you folks up there, and hope that things get back to normal very, very, very quickly. I know that even though you're on that watch list, it's still very low compared to some areas of the state and some areas of the country.
Absolutely, and sometimes, you know, our county health officer actually serves both Yuba and Sutter. So
right.
Sometimes when you look at those numbers, you have to make sure that you're separating them out by counties. And certainly Sutter County is going to be a little higher than Yuba County
right.
just because our population is so much larger.
Sure. Yeah, and I think the how you get on the watch list, it was based on your own figures. You know, if you're, you know, if you only had 10 last week and now you got 20, you're going in the wrong direction.
Right.
Even though 20 is way below another county, which maybe has 1,000, but was going in the other direction. You know, so
exactly.
It's. I know the governor and his staff there, and all the county health directors. They're scratching their heads and doing everything they can to try to make the right decisions. But it's very difficult, and it's difficult on you folks for sure, and your faculty and the parents and the students. And
We're hoping that we can possibly take advantage of that waiver where we can put together a plan, because we do have a smaller student population. Mm-hmm. We currently have 130 enrolled. And, if we can prove that, we can monitor the situation and that we can reduce most of the risks, there is that little footnote that,
right.
you can possibly, so that's what we're working with Lincoln Snyder.
Right.
And
the superintendent,
work on that.
Right.
So, there are always these little, you just have to look and say, okay, how can we work this so that it will that it can happen, and happen safely so that all of our families feel like their children are safe, because everybody's at a different level of fear.
Yeah, I think virtually everybody agrees that in most cases with most students, the in-person is the very best way to go. And everybody wants their kids to be safe, and I think from the top down, no matter what your politics are or anything else, I think everybody agrees on those things. And so we just trust the Lord. And as you say, sacrifice your knees and your lower back and get.
And that's the other thing we've really been trying to do is support, we did end up going to family prayer. We set up a family prayer lesson plan for each week rather than individual,
right,
quote-unquote, religion classes, so that, we do have catechesis of the Good Shepherd at our school. So,
oh, very good.
It was pretty impressive that many of the children were able to show their parents how to set up a prayer table and a sacred space.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yes, so we've been really encouraging and providing them the materials and the tools they need to be able to successfully build that domestic church and, go ahead and ask for the providence of the Lord through this to, help them get through this and understand.
It's been
or
one
not
of the,
understand, but just trust.
It's been one of the benefits in our family is family prayer that maybe we weren't doing often enough together.
Exactly.
And now we are. Well, Susan, so good to talk to you. It's so good to know what great hands our students up in Sutter and Yuba County and maybe even Butte County are in. And we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. That's wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Susan. God bless. That's Susan Berkey, the principal at St. Isidore's up in Yuba City. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just.